Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter.
Hey Watchers, it's Scott, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. First up, Nyan and I give Dan our feedback on the comedy special, Aziz Ansari, Nightclub Comedian, available on Netflix. And just a heads up, if you hear any extraneous noises towards the end of this segment, please just ignore them. But don't ignore us, please. We crave attention. Later in the episode, Scott puts Dan and Nyan in lockup by pitching the show Lock and Key, which is also available on Netflix. Get it? Lock up, lock and key. Moving on. As always, if you are enjoying or hating any of this podcast, please rate and review us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also hit us up on our Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook page, as we do monitor each of those pages. Who knows? You may even get a shout out in a future app. Finally, feel free to leave us a voicemail with a pitch of a show or movie you want us to watch on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. All right, watchers, let's go on to more nonsense.
Hi, it's Dan, the journeyman of none, here to get feedback on the new Netflix comedy special, Aziz Ansari, Nightclub Comedian. So hold on to your chicken cheeky parm parm, because it's time to treat yourself by hearing Scott and Nyan's thoughts. So, what'd you think?
I think it was a lot of Aziz Ansari references all at once, and I'm kind of delighted. It was a solid set. It was a solid, good 30-minute set. Well, Scott, I'll let you go from there.
Okay. It really kind of meandered, it seemed, in terms of the subject matter. And I will give him a lot of credit, though, for making jokes that ended up being pretty funny about some very serious topics, which is definitely not easy to do. But I kind of expected that from Aziz Ansari, and he did deliver. So overall, I did really enjoy it, as I've enjoyed some of his other work. And it was definitely some things that I didn't quite expect in terms of what some of the references that he made and some of the issues that he talked about. But overall, I enjoyed it very much.
So I have a question about your comments about meandering. So was the meandering, did you feel it was detrimental? Or I guess, what are you classifying as meandering per se?
And I guess this is an issue that I've had in a lot of ways with stand-up comedy things that I've seen. Now, granted, there haven't been that many. But it doesn't seem natural the way that one topic flows into another. That's what I meant.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you think of it or try and compare it to, say, an actual storyline, yes, I could see that, you know, that could definitely happen for sure. And I think that, you know, every comedian's style and approach, and feel free to interject here afterwards, you know, I think they have a different kind of idea behind it. So some people, you know, they have the self-deprecating route. Some people, they have anecdotal stories. Sometimes they have, like, you know, a certain kind of theme behind everything, and then they try to tie it all together in the end or whatnot. So I think that it's a little bit different with every comic, I think, for sure. And I think depending upon whether or not they're trying out a bunch of new material for this on the road, for putting it together for a special, whereas I think this was a little bit more like he's reemerging from the ether, I would say, and coming out there and trying to put himself out there and kind of get back into that comedic flow. And that's what I took from it. So that's just my two cents.
That's fair. And I think Scott's criticism of that particular element is something that isn't going to be resolved in any current day stand-up comedy special. Just in terms of the way comedy is structured nowadays, from my experience in terms of stand-up, things aren't structured to flow from one thing into the other, because that becomes problematic from a storytelling standpoint, I think, in terms of just people developing material and being able to switch from topic to topic. Because if you're looking for essentially kind of a TED talk on one particular topic and to be cohesive, you're not going to get that. It's hard to squeeze all that material out. I mean, in that sense, you could see it as a criticism of the genre and artistry, but I don't think it is, because otherwise the alternative is getting a 60-minute set about airline food, potentially. Like, if you kind of just stayed consistently with the same joke and kind of weaved it in into each other, it's doable, but it doesn't, I don't think it works within the context of the art form as it is today. I don't think that's what you're going to see. So if that's something that's integral for you to be able to appreciate or to like a stand-up special, I don't think it's going to happen for you. I mean, there might be comics that do it. I get that Gavigan might be someone who might be able to pull that together potentially.
Well, but it's a loose theme. Like, obviously, Gaffigan does a lot of parenthood-related items, for example. And I think that's it's a loose theme, yeah. As far as, I think the only time I've seen something that's tighter than that is if you're looking at a segment, say, on a Daily Show or comparative kind of, you know, show in that regard, where there is a specific kind of goal or a topic that's being addressed across the board here. And John Oliver, you know, John Oliver, for example, he does a lot of more current event type stuff. And I think that is more, I'd say, more cohesive. Like, he does do his main topic for anywhere from like 15 to 16 minutes of the show usually. And then there's a bunch of other stuff interspersed in between, obviously. So again, you know, I do appreciate both sides. I got to see, you know, why you'd want to hear about one thing and not jump around. On the flip side of that, like you said, I think that comedy, I think even if you went back to Carlin and Pryor and everyone else in between then and now, I don't think you'd find a lot of, I would say, tightly themed sets for the most part.
And I don't think you can make a direct comparison between the stand-up set and something like, you know, John Oliver's Last Week Tonight, because there you're dealing with a team of writers who have a week to prepare and are tasked with something, producing something for...
Right. I'm just talking about the realm of comedy. Yeah. It's not a direct comparison, obviously. Yeah. But I just was saying, you know, this is just the only thing comedically that it is, I think, has a tighter focus than just say parenthood, sex relationships, parental relationships. You know, everyone has their body image topics. So there are people out there that focus on these things. It just was an idea of, like, you know, what could bridge the gap of this kind of concept of, but as a genre, definitely, you're not going to find anything that's tight.
And that is not to say that I didn't enjoy it or didn't find that he had very astute observations on certain things, which I think he did. It's just that that aspect of comedy specials, and I'm sure, like you said, that's most of them are like that, where they jump around from different topics, is just, it's not something I'm used to, so it's something that stood out. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and I wonder how it would compare. Like, you know, I mean, I wonder if having a half an hour, I think, is maybe a better baby step into it for you. Because I think if you're on an hour-long special, it might, you know, be a little bit more daunting, possibly, if you're not used to that kind of genre. But, just, you know, not sure.
I guess that maybe that's a more of a question for Scott, because I've dealt with both versions, right? Like, both the 30-minute, the half-hour comedy hour, if you will, if you're a Mario Joyner fan or remembers the half-hour comedy hour from MTV back in the mid-90s, and or just the hour-long sets. Or are people getting up to an hour and a half at this point? I don't even know. Maybe
I've never seen anyone get that far. The only people that have come close, I would say, are the macro level of entertainers and or some... Even the musical people, like if you were to take Bo Burnhams of the world, I mean, they're generally around an hour even, I think.
Right. No, fair enough. So I think it will kind of tend to just as the nature of the genre, there's definitely going to be some bouncing around.
Yeah, and Nyan, though, I did remember, and I'll tell you how I remembered in a second, the most recent stand-up special I watched. And it's been quite a long time, and I didn't even really remember that I'd seen it. But it was the Ali Wong one, whenever the last time that she was pregnant.
Oh, wow.
Oh, the Baby Cobra one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And that was, what, like at least 3 or 4 years ago, I think, right?
Yeah, it's funny you're saying that out, because she just released another one like a week or two ago.
I was just going to mention that, yeah. I wonder, who's going to pitch that one next?
And so apparently after watching the Aziz Ansari special, Netflix suggested that one.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Oh, you silly algorithm.
I know, right? So apparently just watching one special from one person of Asian descent was enough for them to recommend a comedy special for another person of Asian descent.
Yeah. Well, they've been focusing on comedy so much in terms of like the random specials that they've thrown out there, in terms of like the random little shorter specials on top of the hour long specials that they've given people. It's kind of crazy, but yeah, I guess they were just like, you just really dig Asians, have some more Asians.
Yes, apparently that's what they thought.
Yeah. And let's make sure they're crazy rich.
Yes.
Exactly. And apparently Aziz Ansari, I don't know if he just had something against Timothy Chalamet, but he went on about Timothy Chalamet.
We all have something against Timothy Chalamet. We're all just jealous.
The people on TikTok love that SNL sketch that he did with Pete Davidson, you know, when they're on that talk show. They had Questlove, I think, come out and guest host the show. And I don't like that sketch very much, but apparently all of TikTok loves to repurpose that and redub that with other people. And I don't understand. I just didn't like that sketch at all. I mean, because it's like, it's just random and I don't know, just didn't find it funny. But that's I did like him as Paul Atreides, for the record.
Okay.
I mean, not as much as Kyle MacLachlan, because I have a soft spot for that.
I actually thought he was pretty good in Don't Look Up. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
No.
Not yet.
Well, he also say he has a very small part in it, and I didn't even recognize him until the credits, and I realized who it was. But it was pretty good. It was pretty funny to say that.
Speaking of mentions, Scott, do you have any comments on a certain sports person that was mentioned?
Which one?
I believe it was Mr. Aaron Rodgers.
Oh yes. I'll say, I think he mentioned a few different sports people.
He did, but I think he spent the most time on Aaron Rodgers, if memory serves.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was pretty much right on in what he was talking about with that.
Yeah.
So actually, if we're going to do it, if we're going to start getting into people that Scott recognized from the show, I'd like to introduce a new sort of sub-segment for this particular segment, which is, did Scott know who this person was? And the reason I'd like to do this is because there were a bunch of cultural references, but Scott is a middle-aged white guy who didn't know who Garrison Keillor was, so I can't guarantee that he knew who all the people that Aziz Ansari mentioned were.
Some references are pretty deep.
Well, given that you had to write me a glossary for the Black Lady Sketch Show episode,
right?
Which was helpful, I will say. So I guess we never know who. It's a very good chance that I won't know these people, but go ahead.
I've got four that I called out, and Dan, you can add on if you'd like. Scott, do you know who DJ Khaled is?
Yes, because he was in one of the Pitch Perfect movies.
Ah, fair enough.
That's right. I forgot about that.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, okay. So basically I know him from a movie with a bunch of white people. So yes.
Fair enough. Do you know who Ice Cube is?
Yes. Wait, he was the one in NWA, right?
Yes.
Yes. All right.
One of the members of NWA, but yes. Okay. Scott, do you know who Travis Scott is?
No.
Fair enough. He had a concert where a bunch of people died, and it's probably his fault.
Okay. I mean, that's not funny, but okay.
No, it's not funny. It's awful, and I think he's super overrated, but that's beside the point. It's probably better you don't know who he is, because he seems terrible.
Yeah, yeah, I'm okay with not knowing who he is, but he's a rapper, I guess, right?
That is correct. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then my last, Scott, do you know who this person is? Do you know who Frank Ocean is?
I've heard of Billy Ocean.
Close.
Yes.
Actually, fairly close in terms of the fact that they're both singers. But Frank Ocean is an R&B singer who's worked with, is a little bit more popular nowadays.
And once again, no relation to the fictional character of Danny Ocean.
That's correct.
That was going to be my next guess.
Fair. It all comes back to Ocean's 11. Dan, did you have any? Does Scott know who this person is?
No, I didn't have any else prepared. Those are the ones off the top of my head that I remembered, actually. So, but I appreciated the segment. So, thank you for tuning in to Does Scott Know This Pop Culture Person?
All right. I knew half of those, that list.
That was pretty good. That was awesome, man. I was impressed.
But yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, it's okay. I knew those people from movies they've been in, not from what they've actually done to make them famous, but it's okay.
Oh, well, a movie they've been in may help make them more famous.
That's true.
So I don't know. I think it still works.
There you go. That is true.
Absolutely.
I guess overall, this special to me, as far as a comedy special goes, was interesting. I appreciated the bookends with Young Aziz, and that was interesting. It did feel like he was going full Letty Bruce, like with all the random truth bombs here and there, which if you watch his earlier specials, is not as much of the case, but you can see him evolving into this. So I get where he's going and I appreciate it, but there were these truth bomb breaks. I was like, you've gotten full. It felt like Master of None in some ways, which don't get me wrong. I'm never going to denigrate Master of None. I think that show is brilliant. I love it 100%. But in the context of a comedy show or a comedy special, I don't know if it necessarily works. It was okay. It wasn't mind-blowing. I don't think it carried the gravitas that it necessarily was intended to carry. It certainly was no Nanette. He's not full on Hannah Gadsby. But ultimately, it worked for what it was. I do think it's weird that he refused to acknowledge McMillions in any way with his Monopoly sketch, like, or his Monopoly bit in terms of the pieces. I thought that was a little silly because half the people in that audience have seen McMillions and they know what he's talking about, or at least have a nuanced view of how McDonald's really should be handling, or hopefully has handled, Monopoly games since the McMillion scandal happened. But ultimately, that was fine. And the random shots of the audience members, it's not something that happens in other comedy specials in my experience as much. You get it a little bit, but I understand why they did it in such an intimate venue. Mm-hmm. And it was okay. I didn't think it added or detracted. I was kind of neutral on it. Overall, solid special, good set. Scott knew a lot of the people that he referenced, so that was really helpful.
Yeah, agreed. I pretty much agree with your take on this, Nyan. And knowing most of the references definitely helped me appreciate it that much more.
So, yeah. So, I think that, you know, I didn't think there was going to be land breaking in a lot of different ways, but I think it was for what it was. Again, it's a half an hour low investment kind of thing. I think that was really what I got out of it, and that, you know, and it was quick. It really like flew by. Like I said, I put this on at the end of the night. I was just finishing my beer. I think this was really kind of what I needed. I needed something that was a little bit, you know, somewhat cathartic, I guess, in some ways, you know, in dealing with some kind of more modern topics in light of our current society, and this kind of fit the bill. By no means this might not even stand the test of time at all in the future in the larger scheme of things. Like, it's not like it's not a huge groundbreaking routine that some, you know, legendary comedians have had, but I think that it's definitely an interesting view into where he might go from here, especially not just as a comedian, but as an individual, because obviously his interpretation of cutting out social media and other things out of his life is very intriguing in some ways. At the same time, it's like, you know, we live in a society that is so wrapped in that. So it's a very interesting dichotomy that exists here.
Yeah, definitely.
It's worth looking into the other specials he's done on Netflix, which are readily available if you're a Netflix subscriber. So it's interesting to see the kind of the evolution of where he's gone.
Yeah. I think what were you going to say, Scott?
I didn't realize that he lives in London now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Me neither. That was random.
It was random, but again, he wanted a different type of, you know, lifestyle. And I think there are segments of people in London that it's a different pace. I would say it's still a faster pace than most of a lot of the places in Europe, I would say, but it's still a lot slower than New York for sure.
Cool. Well, thank you for suggesting that, Dan.
Yeah. And just so you know, it's great that we have all of these comedy specials at our disposal on Netflix. Just make sure not to share your past.
And if you want to get that joke, make sure you listen to our previous episode.
All right. So that's what we thought.
Hi, everyone. This is Scott, and the show I am pitching now is Lock and Key, which is on Netflix. There have been two seasons thus far, and this show is based on a graphic novel I have read, meaning I read about it. I have not actually read the graphic novel, but I've read that that's where this series originated, and it has now been turned into a series described on Wikipedia as a fantasy horror drama, which is interesting combination of three different types of shows, which apparently it is all three of those. So I didn't know a lot about the backstory, but I really enjoyed watching, just getting into the show and watching the show without really having any preconceived notions based on the material that originated from. And I've only seen the first season. The second season was released 2 months ago, but I haven't quite gotten to it yet. But I have seen all of the first season, which premiered in 2020. The main premise, and I'll try not to give too much away, is there's a family, the Locke family, and the Locke is spelled with an E at the end, who move into their family's ancestral home in Massachusetts, Nyan.
Nice.
So I figured you would definitely like that. The name of their town is made up, as far as I know. It's called Matheson, so not an actual town. But
it's, is it a mention of Tim Matheson, perhaps?
Perhaps. I think it's very possible that the people who made the show or who wrote the graphic novel were fans of Tim Matheson, for sure.
I don't think I'm going to like this show, but okay, please continue.
It is located somewhere near Boston, apparently, because one of the characters keeps saying how he goes back and forth to Boston. So that's
like me.
There you go. Yeah, so it could be right next to where you live, Nyan. Never know. And the father, though, was killed and had a mysterious past, which they explored later on in the show. So the mother and their kids decide they want a fresh start. So they move to this ancient, spooky, big mansion. And the kids end up finding these keys hidden throughout the house that have magical powers. And Dan, you will very much like that they have a lot of lock and key puns throughout the show.
Yes.
The name of their mansion is called Key House. Basically, as it goes on, they keep finding different keys and different people are trying to get the keys from them. And each key has a different ability. So they keep trying them out and then they discover what happened to the father and how it all relates to the keys in the house in the present day. So it's very much kind of a mystery. I guess I don't know if it's quite has a lot of horror elements. At least I didn't think it does, but I guess here and there it does have some horror elements. And one of the producers is Carlton Cuse, who has been involved with a number of shows over the years, including Lost, I believe, and a bunch of others.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, I don't want to give too much away because a lot of it is about uncovering these mysteries. That is how the story begins.
Okay, so you've seen season one, but not season two?
Yes.
And how long has season two been out?
3 months, I think.
Yeah, okay. I thought it just came out a little while ago.
Okay.
In late 2021, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay,
so we don't know if season two is terrible.
That's right. We do not know at this point.
But yeah, you could have watched it before pitching it, and we would have known whether it was terrible or not.
Well, season one was very enjoyable, so okay. That's what I'm basing this on.
Speaking of season one, what is the length of season one?
10 episodes.
Okay.
Yep. I am going to go in order this time because there's a lot of jumping around with different time periods and some of how the different parts of the story connect. So I'm recommending episodes one and two of season one.
And it sounds like that there's a certain amount of, as their knowledge increases, the viewer's knowledge increases as to what the rules are in this keyed universe, so yes. To speak.
Yes, and all of the fantastical things that end up happening. Yes. There are three kids. The oldest is Tyler, who is in high school. I think he's supposed to be either, I'm guessing, a junior or a senior in high school. Then he has a younger sister, Kinsey, who is either a freshman or a sophomore. She's a little bit younger than him. And then Bodhi, who is maybe 8 or 9, I think, or is supposed to be. So there's a few different ages of the children. They each have a different perspective on what's happening or what they, the things that they discover in the show.
So can I ask a question? Is there any influence you think that's coming in from, say, C.S. Lewis, for example?
Yes. Yes, I can definitely see that. And they reference Narnia at one point in the show.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So good call there.
The chronic, what calls of Narnia?
Wait, do they all sit in silver chairs?
Not that I remember. No silver chairs, but
it's not, that sounds like, I feel like they have to progress beyond season one before they probably do that. I'm guessing that's a season two reference, if anything.
It very well could be.
Because aren't they a little bit old? They have to progress through some hoops and stuff like that across the board here until they can, you know, really get to that moment, I guess. That's what I'm guessing. I don't know. I could be wrong.
It's possible. I don't know. That's the one Narnia book that always stuck out to me for some reason. I don't know why, but fair enough. So in terms of the reasons Dan and I will like this, it's because it's based in Massachusetts. And then what were the other things, Scott?
Well, there's puns for me.
Puns. Yes. Okay, we got puns.
Good lock and key puns for Dan. And okay. I think it's a very enjoyable fantasy type show with like a little bit of sci-fi, a little bit of magic thrown in, and okay, with a little bit of a different approach. I don't think I've seen a show before that really uses keys and doors as the main way that people access like these fantastical elements.
Right. Cause even like, cause there's almost always a single gate, a la Stargate, a la Sliders, a la, you know, I feel like this is definitely a little bit different. Although spoilers for the current season of DC's Legends of Tomorrow, they kind of have a little trope that's somewhat similar, but it's still different though. So.
And it's not like Harry Potter where wizards and witches are all over the place. They try to frame it that the world is the real world, except when they start discovering these things in this one house.
Is there also no formal education system? Because I appreciated the fact that there was clearly some sort of teacher's union at Hogwarts, from what I can tell.
There is an educational element to it. They do attend a private school in Massachusetts.
My wife works at a private school in Massachusetts, so that's, I'm curious to see if it even remotely alludes to that one that's been around for quite some time. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, there's a number of those, from my understanding, in and about everywhere from North Adams and beyond. So yeah,
oh, for sure. Plenty, yeah.
If your wife ends up watching some of this with you, Nine, I'll be interested to hear her perspective on how this fictional private school compares to hers.
So it sounds like to me that this, like, in addition to the C.S. Lewis references, it kind of almost follows a more Indiana Jones type mysticism with regards to the magic. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, I think you could relate the style of this show to Indiana Jones a little.
So they're going to be Indian people eating monkey brains? Is that what you're telling me?
That I believe was fairly unique to that particular Indiana Jones movie.
Well, yeah, if we're going Indiana Jones route, like, definitely a large part of the canon.
That's true. But in terms of exploring these mystical things that keep happening and the new abilities that the keys allow them to experience, that up until that point they just figured were only things you could do like in stories and that they could never actually experience in quote unquote real life.
So when they were saying Kali Ma, he was just too lazy to say Massachusetts, or he said Ma instead.
That's right. The Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was actually about Massachusetts. 100%. You're absolutely right. That's totally what happened. Steven Spielberg, there were just a lot of typos in the script. That's why they ended up in India. They cast all these Indian actors. And that's why I had to spend most of my childhood trying to explain to people or deal with people just being straight up racist and being like, oh, do you guys eat chilled monkey brains? And I'm like, yes, we do that every Thanksgiving. just like all the other Indians.
But for the record, I also blame Johnny Quest.
Yeah, Johnny Quest wasn't helping. Let's be real.
And John Candy's Who's Harry Crumb?
Was that racist? Because I vaguely remember.
You don't remember? I mean, forgive me for butchering this. No, I'm VG from Bombay Air Conditioning.
Oh, yeah, no, that was very racist. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that.
Again, it has its moments, I guess. It's kind of a cute John Candy movie. I think that there's other ones that are infinitely better, but it's fine.
Yeah, no, that was fun round of brown face from everybody involved. Thanks, John Candy. But wow. Hopefully this show does better. It doesn't sound like the show is racist, Scott. So it just has a lot of racist history to make up for, apparently.
Yes, and I hope it does that, I guess, in some way. There is a random African-British guy for some unknown reason.
What do you mean by African-British guy?
I guess as opposed to like an African-American and African-British person.
Kaluuya, yeah. So he's there, he's primarily there to bestow some sort of wisdom upon them, I'm assuming.
Like Idris Elba?
yeah, in a sense. It seems very odd that he would be randomly in this town in Massachusetts, and I don't think they ever explain exactly how he ended up there, but
That sounds like what my neighbors deal with like every day when they see me like taking out the garbage. Like, really? why is this random Indian person in Massachusetts? And I don't understand how we got here. But that might just be Boston's just general racist understanding of other folks, which I do feel to an extent, at least my experience, is somewhat exaggerated, but also somewhat on point because some people are just racist assholes.
I agree. I would love for you to carry like a little fake wooden sword, and whenever someone does that, you run at them and say, you know, it's dangerous to go alone. Take this, and just see what they say.
And just hope they go full Zelda. That'd be amazing.
Exactly. I just would love to see their response. See like how they react to that.
I did have someone. I think the most recent really randomly racist thing someone had said to me was that a couple years ago, after I'd moved up to Massachusetts, when I went to the Oddball Comedy Festival, this actually relates back to our last pitch, the Aziz Ansari special nightclub comedian, in that I was there for the Oddball Comedy Festival was the Xfinity Center or Great Woods or whatever it's called now. And Aziz was headlining. And some dude actually literally asked me if I was there to see Aziz and then asked me something about having curry in my pocket. And at that point, I was just like, wow, that's incredibly racist. And he weirdly backed off. Like, he didn't think I would think that would be racist. And I had to say, no. And he just expected me to shrug it off and be super psyched that he was asking me about curry in my pocket. This racist dick then literally was actually apologized, which is real weird. I don't even know why, like, you would have the conversation with the expectation you might have to apologize at some point. Racism in Massachusetts, still real and kind of weird.
And although they do not explore that angle in the show, to my knowledge.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, but I heard a couple other people online in various Discord discussions talk about the show and saying it was, you know, and so again, I'm definitely looking forward to myself. It sounds like from what Scott's saying, they've got this kind of subgenre on lock, and it hopefully will be off the keychain.
And I think you will find there are many key points from the first two episodes that you can use to inform you of whether you like the show. The first episode is called Welcome to Matheson. The episode two is called Trapper/Keeper.
Oh, no relationship to the Trapper Keeper episode of South Park.
Not that I'm aware of, but I do like
the Trapper Keeper I owned in fifth grade.
What about your Trapper Keeper from eighth grade?
Fifth grade. And also, is this related somehow to the, because it was really cool because it had an F-16 on the cover.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah, okay. Were you drawing the Stussy S on there 1,000 times as well?
You know what? That wasn't my thing. Like, I did not appreciate that at the time, and I probably should have, but I was not cool enough to appreciate the Stussy.
I was not cool enough to draw them either. I just was not very good at it, so.
I wish I kept my Trapper Keepers from back in the day.
Yeah, if they were in any like decent condition, you could probably get a pretty penny for them, I'm betting.
I bet you could, yeah. So all of that combines into a really interesting show, in a manner of speaking, called Lock and Key. So I'll be interested to hear what you guys think about it.
Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today, and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.